Blog Talk Radio. On behalf of Omi Inca's Man 2 production, we'd like to thank you for traveling on the journey with her and the journey of the class agent. We'd like to also invite you to participate and partake of the healing process of consuming the poetry which was intended for healing women in recovery. We also like to invite you to also tune in for future poems that have been written for the sole purpose of women in recovery. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and may you find your destiny as Sherelle seeks to find her destiny.
Hello, Alafia. Greetings and Hotep. I'm glad that you can join us this evening. And you have reached the Care to Read room. This is Omi Inca 7, live coming to you straight from my living room. Yes, that's right. I'm coming from my living room, and we're featuring a special show. We just did the Tony Bamber show. I don't know why the complications in listing of my shows, but we're not doing Tony Bamber today. We've already done Tony Bamber. We're going to go on with our poetry night, and we're going to talk a little bit about the various different authors today. And one of our authors that we're going to feature is the only passion through the storytelling of Sojourn the Truth. We're going to be featuring a little bit of information about Sojourn the Truth. And I will also be talking with you about my poetry. So stay tuned and listen up.
A Real Soldier, read by the author Omi Inca Bidiako Garth. Didn't come here to put on your gear, aligning myself with soldiers standing in fear. I'm not just rapping, for I'm real sincere. This time was reserved for those who could persevere. You got a real soldier. I thought I had told you that you got a real soldier, and that no weapons formed against me, no weapons formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposters. This is for all you detailed characters in disguise. No longer will you be able to reprise. Didn't come here to win your medal prize. I'm on a mission. That's what you really despise. You've got a real soldier. I thought I told you that you got a real soldier, and that no weapon formed against me, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposters. I took a job on tour overseas to only discover that my family and I now would be under siege. I'm behind enemy lines, fighting in a war that's not even mine. I aim to stand my ground like the Board of Education versus Brown. You've got a real soldier. I thought I had told you that you got a real soldier, and that no weapon formed, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposters. So it was your plan to inseminate false evidence to incriminate, which only led you to discriminate. Was it the scholar in me that caused you to hate, forcing you to enter into this fatal debate? Didn't you think that you could actually succeed to execute your own laws that you wouldn't even heed? You got a real soldier. I thought I had told you that you got a real soldier. And that no weapon formed against me, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposter. While looking back in retrospective, you never should have challenged the queen of intellectual. Why didn't you know that I was sent from the green light of the benevolent? I'm battling you right here on your own land in the Netherlands. Why, the very cries of the people, they summons me here. They have a mighty warrior, void of all fear. Why, my very words are charged with energy and ordered not to return unto me void, but to accomplish that which is intended. And to your very ways you have amended. I'm a soldier. I thought I had told you that I'm a soldier and that no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposter. Refuse to take your brand. Instead, I took a stand. Now watch me enter into a divine man. Attempted cultural genocide. I wonder, will the courts override, or will this be a case for the media to decide? Wait! Hold up! Didn't I tell you? I was a born strategist. While you're dealing with one of the baddest practitioners, born of a sign of fire, why I entered this world with water surrounding me, having the whole host of heaven on my side. Therefore, I will not be reprised. Why I was born in the year of Mayat, which embodies the doctrine of divinity of law and order. I'll weigh your heart against the double halls of truth and justice, and the rule a standard against you. I'll measure your deeds against the cubic two. Then I'll throw the papyrus scepter book at you. By now, you should know who I am. By now, you should know who I am. I'm a real soldier. I'm more than a conqueror.
Welcome back, family. You've just heard the voice of Omiika reciting a poetry from the collection of The Journey of the Class Agent. That's right. That's from The Journey of the Class Agent. I'd like for you to go out and check out my poetry on my website, on my blog. The web page is there. You can look it up, and there are some samples there that you can listen to, or you can even purchase and download my CD. Now, this is Friday, or did I tell you that or not? There's a lot going on Friday, but however, we always like to whoop it up on Friday. So if you're down with it, say, I'm down with it on Friday. Get ready, ladies and gentlemen, but before we go into that, we acknowledge our ancestors, and if you'll just stand to your feet while I pour a libation, I appreciate that. I pour libations and set a glass of water for my father's spirit, and I say. I pour libations and I set a glass of water for my mother's spirit, and I say. I light a candle for my mother's spirit, and I say. I'll light a candle for my father's spirit, and I say, and giving recognition and acknowledgement to Oludulamare, the god of this universe, and to Olorum, the African prophet, and Ori, the god who lives within our head. Each and every one of us have a cooperative god that works on the inside of us. Name is Ori. This is Olorum, clothed in matter, who works directly with us. That's why he can never leave us. We pay homage to our ancestors, and we say, homage comes to pass, homage comes to pass. We acknowledge each and every one of our ancestors, Robert Jenkins, Ashe, Clara Jenkins, Ashe, Tommy Pete Harvey, Ashe, George Lilly, Ashe, Sam Lilly, Ashe, Eugene Lilly, Ashe, Tommy Pete Harvey, Ashe, Mary Lou Hawkins, Ashe, and we also say Essely Pope, Ashe. We pay homage to you, family, and ask you to come back home and join us. We ask you to reconnect with our forces so that we may become one. We acknowledge who you are and pay homage to you today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for following suit with the routine that I present to you and calling your ancestors. Do this often in remembrance of your ancestors. Lord, I thank you for the families who are represented here today. May you progress them in the areas that they need to be fulfilled in. May you give them abundance, Father, and may their household forevermore be filled. And may you put them over assignments where they are over the grain house. And may filthy lucre forevermore be present in their hand, pressed down together, measured together, running over in their bosom. May they have excess. May they be able to access houses that they didn't build with their own hands. And may they have things that they call into being. Eyes have not seen, ears have not heard for what you have prepared for us. I know you go and make many mentions for us. Let us be able to find our Ile Ife over in Africa. Let us reconnect with the land that our motherland has set aside for us. And as we begin to come into consciousness of ourselves, may we understand that there has been houses and homes laid up for us over on the other side of Ile Ife. That is our Garden of Eden. And we thank you, Father, for that opportunity. And ladies and gentlemen, as I apologize for the fact that the listing is incorrect, or there's been some changes in our format, But I want you to follow along with what I'm doing today, not necessarily for what's on the screen. And as I indicated earlier, they have set the system a little bit different, and we would like to take that system to another level. So we are going to go on with the poetry. We are going to go on with the poetry, ladies and gentlemen. Just bear with me for 1 second here, and we will be bringing on Sojourner Truth. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Sojourner Truth. A lot of people never mention her name and what she's all about, but Sojourner Truth is going to come to us and give us many insights. So I'd like to pause for a second and go to station identification. So if you just pause with me, and we'll be right back at you in the air.
A Chief and Not an Indian, read by the author Omika Garth. Born of the Blackfoot Indian tribe, one of the real reasons why I still survive, to those with opinions who wonder why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian, for I'm tribal, you see. My destiny was soon to be foretold, of the prophecy to be unfold, of a leader to come, and a real gift, even to some, raised around the circle of the tree of life, with a dream catcher used as a device. This is why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian. It was a vision of a leader to come, and a real gift, even to some, with a child at the center of the family's link. This was one of the tools used to keep a leader in sync. Raised in a tribe of 18, with 8 chiefs and 10 Indians. And if you're wondering where the 8th chief arrived, it's no real surprise, for I'm the real leader of the pack, with all 10 Indians who've got my back. This is why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian. It was a vision of a leader to come, and a real gift even to some. While Mama made her transition when I was just 2, there was nothing left for me to do but to lead my people into the underground steeple. Why, one of the traits of a real chief is to take charge against those who would barge. By consulting the oracles for spiritual instructions in order to avoid chaos and disruption. Like gods and goddesses, they do this. Like kings and queens, they do too. Like priests and priestesses, they all do it too. Cast lots to determine their spot. This is why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian. It was a vision of a leader to come, and a real gift even to some. You see, a chief knows their place, so back up and get out of my space. Don't try playing me for no Indian, acting like you're smoking on the peace pipe of indigo. I'm calling you out like a real chief. I aim to take back what was mine, you thief. Oh, and if you're still wondering why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian, just check the history books. Why, it's no real mystery. For centuries, you have desecrated our land, forfeited God's plan for man, called us out of our name, left us feeling shame, stole our language, then pushed us into anguish, attempted to render us mute. That's when we had to hit you with a suit. Took us to a level of deprivation, which led us to call for reparation. You stole from a chief, you dirty thief. Now I'm going to leave you in your grief.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you've just heard was one of the sequence from The Journey of the Class Agent. And that cut could also be found on my webpage. You could purchase that single, or you could actually purchase that as the collection. Now I'd like to go right into Sojourner Truth, and it looks like we have a guest in the audience, and I'm going to acknowledge the guest as soon as I get the Sojourner Truth tape up on the listing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Sojourner Truth was one of our famous orators. She was not necessarily a reader. She did not have the capabilities and was sold into slavery and bought off the auction block and went and found a great master that was really, really interested in her learning to be an orator. She went on to become a great orator, speaking all over the continent. And ladies and gentlemen, when you hear this information, listen up.
A lame old man who froze to death alone in a shack in the woods. She told of beatings, with scars, never healed. But Sojourner also told of the triumph of taking freedom for herself, of using the law to bring her son back. As she spoke, she felt the power her words had and knew she'd never be afraid to speak before a crowd again. She made people listen. She made people understand. So when Sojourner Truth finally asked, "Is this any way to treat a human being?" people knew the answer was no. She wandered for many years, a tall, dark figure in plain gray clothes, wearing a white cap on her head. She'd stop for a while, say what needed saying, then move on. She was a sojourner, only passing through. When people threatened to burn down the place where she planned to speak, she vowed angrily that she'd still be heard, speaking from the ashes. Wherever she went, she carried a white silk banner with the words, "Proclaim Liberty," embroidered on it. People listened and thought about what they had heard. They told others what Sojourner Truth had said, and her message spread throughout the land. Women at the North, all talking about rights. The white man will be in a fix pretty soon. But what's all this here talking about? That man over there says that women need to be helped into carriages and lifted over ditches and have to have the best place everywhere. Nobody ever helps me into carriages or over mud puddles or gives me any best place. And ain't I a woman? Look at me. Look at my arm. I have plowed and planted and gathered into barns, and no man could head me. And ain't I a woman? I could work as much and eat as much as a man when I could get it, and bear the lash as well. And ain't I a woman? I have borne 13 children and seen most all sold off to slavery. And when I cried out with my mother's grief, none but Jesus heard me. And ain't I a woman? Then they talk about this thing in their head. What's this they call it? Intellect. That's it, honey. What's that got to do with women's rights or Negroes' rights? If my cup won't hold but a pint, and yours holds a quart, wouldn't you be mean not to let me have my little half measure full? Then that little man in black there, he says women can't have as much rights as men, cause Christ wasn't a woman. Where did your Christ come from? Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Man had nothing to do with him. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone, then these women together ought to be able to turn it back and get it right side up again. And now they is asking to do it. The man better let them. Obliged to you for hearing me. And now old Sojourner ain't got nothing more to say.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the voice of Sojourner. And as she said, she had nothing left to say. We're going to believe that. But we know Sojourner went on to speak all over the county, all over the land. She was known for her outspoken orator. And I want you to go and find her materials, find her books. And you can find her books listed under the only passage through. And this was through a story that was written by Anne Cockrell. Excuse me, Anne Rockwell is a storyteller of Sojourner Truth. Now, we'll go back to Sojourner Truth shortly, but I want to acknowledge my guests that's in the audience and say hello to my guests. So if you just bear with me 1 minute. Caller, you're in the atmosphere. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking to? Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, how are you this evening?
Very well. This is Tanza.
Hi, Tanza. We are talking about poetry, and one of our featured spokesperson is Sojourner Truth that we've been talking about, and we're trying to give a little insight of orators. And I don't know if you're familiar with any great orators. Like, everyone usually say Martin Luther King, but they never mention of the women. I thought I'd bring Sojourner Truth in because she was an excellent orator. And this month we're featuring poetry, short stories, as well as fables and folklore. Do you have any favorite poets, or do you read poetry?
Well, I haven't read any pieces lately, but this is a very excellent choice that you chose for this month.
Thank you, thank you. Well, you know this is National Poetry Month. I will be at Borders tomorrow around 4 o'clock with the teachers there, talking to them about the way you incorporate literature into children who are early learners and the benefits of incorporating it into their home. And what we talk about is having literacy like print on the wall, having storytelling time in the home, featuring various different guests in the community to speak. And over the years, I have lectured and spoke for women groups, and one of my main things is that women get involved because we know as you raise up a woman, you raise up a nation. And as you raise up a nation, that nation can go on and be literate, and that's what we're trying to close the gap of illiteracy and helping families learn to enjoy reading. Now, does your children read with you, or do you read with your children?
Well, now my children are grown women in college. They're college students, but when they were younger, I did read with them. And as a result of that, when you spoke about literacy, I think that is excellent because it does open up the imagination and open up the intellect of our people. So my daughters are both college educators, and I am so excited about that as a result of literacy. So, yeah.
Now, that is great. I am glad to hear that. Now, I bet you started them early because I have two young men. Both of them were not made, but they were required in this house to be literate. So they were encouraged to be involved in book clubs throughout the summer and participate. And their reading really engaged them. One of my sons is multilingual. He is a second he speaks fluent German, and he's thinking about making it his minor. Both of them, my oldest son, he speaks German too. I speak Yoruba. But the main thing that we understood that African Americans learn speak a second language, and my oldest son is college degreed, and my youngest son will be coming out in computer science. But the main thing that they knew I required of them was to read every week. And they see me read fluently. I mean, just things, everything, just read whatever I can. So I always tell them, don't just force your children to read academic things. Let them read articles, journals, whatever they get their hand on. And this class was started for the reason of saying, do you care to read? Meaning that if I brought print into my house, poetry in my house, would you care to read? Now, the poetry came about because I figured a lot of young people like to write various different hip-hop songs, and that is very encouraging. You find people say, well, I don't like hip-hop. I think it's great that young people are engaging in hip-hop. It gives them a chance to write, but it has to be fluent information. It has to be storytelling, and it cannot be the type of writing where you just saying jargon off the top of your head because it's rhyming, and there's too much of that going on. And what I wanted to talk about was that there are many forms of sonnets. There are hekas, and there are also epics that you can write and short stories. You don't always have to engage in just writing rhyming. So most of our African-American men, they don't seem to understand that you can be a storyteller and become a professional folklorist.
Right. That is wonderful.
And, you know, the other thing that we were hoping for the women, a lot of women are hurting. And I usually tell them through therapy and writing in their journal to talk about their hurt, to meditate, to take them away from the climate and environment that is so hurting often, that the writing could take them outside of their situation and allow them to travel. So I featured a show called Slipping Into the Gap many years ago for women who could come in and feature their poetry, talk about their poetry, meditate. So when they're done, you know, in the room, they feel like they've had a transformation. And a large portion of our people are going through hurt from the middle passage, and there needs to be some type of therapeutic counseling done through talking cure. What I do in this room is called a talking cure, where we talk about the issue. We minister to each other, and we do meditation. And in the meditation, it helps you come away from the problems that you're having in your situation, in your life, in your home, in your marriage. And when you walk away from it, you can then begin to see that you had the solution on the inside of you all along. And what do you feel about that?
You know what? I do agree with that point you just made about the solution inside of you. It's like, you know, when I ask people a question, well, you know, why did you do something or why didn't you do it? And the first thing a lot of people say, I don't know. I don't know why I did that, or I don't know why I didn't do that. And I said, if you normally just search within yourself, the answer is actually there. Sometimes we want someone else to give us the answer, but uh-huh. The answer is always there. The signs are always there why we did something. A lot of times why we do something, you know, because we're searching for answers for certain problems or situations. And if you just really sit back and really think about things, you have the answer to basically everything that you're doing or not doing. But what happens a lot of times, we don't want to admit the answer because it may be some fault. We feel like there's fault in there, or someone may want to place blame, and we don't want to really own up to it. But I think it's okay to have faults and downfalls because sometimes it's what
helps. I think, I really think, I wanted to call you Aziza. Help me out with your name again.
Tanza,
I think, I really believe that we have been miseducated in our churches and in our environmental situation of spirituality. We have not really been told the truth that all along for this God that we were looking for out in the atmosphere and searching to help make us complete has always been on the inside of us, and that as we go into ourselves and get to know ourselves better every day, because we're still introducing ourselves to our own personalities because they're forevermore changing. But if we had ministers that would talk about sitting quiet and going within yourself so that God can speak to you, because we're always sending out this energy force of prayer as we engage in asking God for something instead of listening to the answer back from God. So meditation has not played a great part in our churches, which it should play. And as we use meditation, it is a behavior modification too. And once we realize that God placed his image in us, he placed his essence in us, then we have to realize our solutions to find God is on the inside of us. And as we do that, then we find out that we are cooperating and working with God, and he is asleep, immersed in water inside of us, and we've got to stir him up, wake him up, call him into being or her into being. And God doesn't have a gender of he or her. The main thing is that we collaborate with the spirit on the inside of us, so we work together to get things done. That's why you find so many people stumbling on these 12 steps, all these different programs, because they're looking on the outer exterior and not on the inside for solutions. And I found that when you teach people from a perspective of spirituality and not from religion, because religion starts to tie you to something, you feel like you're in bondage. But when you release a person, give them the ability to ignite God and to wake God up and to feel like when they leave the church, they can still connect with God, then they feel like they have materials and tools that they can take home and tap into the powers of God whenever they need it.
Absolutely. I agree. I do.
And we are finding there's so many people that are feeling helpless. They pour their hearts out in the churches. They give everything they got, their substance, their filthy lucre, which we call money. They give everything, and they say, well, God, now where are you? And it's almost like we're paying for a service, and then we think that we're supposed to get it from the church. And when we don't get it, we feel empty, we feel lost. Then we don't know how to regroup ourselves and reconnect to the higher force.
You know what, that is so sound because, like you said, the God is within all of us. I mean, of course, there's good and evil, so we carry both, you know, that spiritual part, which is, you know, God, and also, you know, people say the devil made me do it, but see, the devil cannot make you do anything unless you give him permission, you give him the will. And it's the same with God. If we can advance in our own selves, we're giving that power over to God to allow us to advance in ourselves. And that is so true. And we carry him everywhere we go because he put that spirit. His spirit is within us. That's why he breathed in the breath of life, which is him.
Absolutely. And you know the scriptures. We've read them. The scripture says, greater is he that's in us than he that's in the world. I was repeating that scripture to my son. He said, Mom, what do you mean? I said, there is a God within you. God is not the author of fear. He will not give you the spirit of fear. Fear is a lower extremity, and it is a fleshly thing. When you're supposed to be operating the spirit, he will not give you the spirit of fear. So you have to say, greater is he that's in me than he that's in the world. So it will perfect love casts out all fear. So if God is in you, there's no way you could be in fear. So I was explaining to him, when you're looking for evil out there, believe you me, if you find it, you better believe you empowered evil. Because evil, there's only one force, and that is the force of love. If you choose to take your force and empower that flesh with power and infuse it, you can create a devil. But as far as God is concerned, he will not create a foe against himself. We have given the power over to the devil, but in God's mind, the only thing he said to the devil was, get thee behind me. In other words, you don't exist. So
yes.
I'm constantly telling a black young man, fear ye not, because there's no greater force out there that can get you when God is residing in you. See, when you walk around in fear, you cannot be in spirit, because perfect love casts out fear. So he was trying to understand this evil out there that waits for us. I said, don't ever give way to that evil. Never infuse it with power, because the very thing that you profess that's going to overtake you, through a hypothesis, you'll keep speaking it and you'll bring it into existence.
Amen.
In your words, are you justified, and by your words, are you condemned? So speak the things that God has told you. Repeat his promises. Tell him, you command him. In the Bible it says, command you me. Command him to watch over his words to perfect it. Therefore, make his words come to life to you. So I tell people, words are powerful. Be careful how you use them, because you have the power of life and death in your tongue.
That's right.
Why it's so great to be an orator. Sojourner Truth was so vivid in her wisdom. She used this wisdom to break down racism, where a group of men were getting ready to assault her, and they heard her speak. And she said, I promise you, if you listen to what I have to say, if you listen to what I have to say, you will be glad you did. And they said, promise you, you won't harm me. After she spoke, she soothed a group of grueling men that wanted to slaughter her, and she brought them to their knees with her elegant words, and they began to see the God that was in her. People keep saying, oh, God is coming out the sky. God is in us. And it can be revealed when you cause people to stumble and to stand still in their spot and listen to you, even though they wanted to do harm to you. That's why I find that story so amazing. Her words were so outstanding, even though she wasn't literate. She couldn't read. She wasn't a very good writer. She was a slave, to be exact. But she promised herself that she would use her words to break through the bondage of racism.
And that's wonderful. If you think about the Moses, I mean,
right.
He was not in speech at all. But
that's
once
right.
You get over to something that's bigger than yourself, then you know what I've been told, that as long as you speak from the heart, if you speak those things from the heart, it's more than any education that you can ever obtain.
That's right. That's right. I agree with that. I wholeheartedly agree with that, because I have seen elderly people who never learned to write or read, but were elegant speakers, full of wisdom. And that's what Sojourner Truth was like. That she said that she was not an elegant writer. I found her to be prolific in her speaking because of her height and her presence. It commanded people to listen to her, and usually when you have that ability to speak wisdom, people will listen to what you're saying, and they will be in awe of what you're saying. I found that orators are not made these days. When I was growing up, young people, we had to come together and we had to be taught how to speak, how to articulate, how to put sentences together. Nowadays, you find children who cannot even articulate, and they look at you like you're speaking white. What is this speaking white? It's about speaking
exactly.
The King's language.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. It's just the articulation. You know, it's not about being white or black. If you speak, therefore, with intellect, then it may be perceived as you're speaking like you're white, but it's just the articulation. So if you speak with intellect, we're not saying that it has to be book sense intellect.
Right.
But if you speak with that confidence and that know-how, and like you said, you talked about that power. If you tap into that power, that God in you, then you could come across, and like you said, demand your audiences. And people will hear you and want to hear you. But if you're talking gibberish and you're talking off the back of the wall and you're talking like you don't know anything, you know, it's time to go somewhere and have a sit down and a shut down.
And you know what? I found that true orators have command of their audience. They can make their audience rise or fall. They can intrigue their audience to come to another level, and a good orator will come and speak in quiet and calmness and love, because the Bible said, with love and kindness have I drawn thee. You draw the people to you, and then you begin to let them know that you care about them and that you see them. And you see each and every one of them. And I usually do that with children. I remember their names, and they'll say, how did you know my name? You cared enough to remember my name the first day of school. I said, because I am obligated to know who you are and what your needs are, because I am serving you. And people don't understand, when you're in a leadership position, you become a servant. You first must learn how to serve before you can lead anyone.
Exactly. You cannot lead a person where you've never been. So
that's right.
It's the lowest form, but it's one of the greatest forms that you can ever learn, because if you know servitude, you know humbleness.
That's
and
right.
And if you know how to be humble.
And if you know humbleness, what did Jesus say? Jesus was able to heal the people because he had humility. He was able to feel what they were going through.
Right.
Then he was able to touch where they needed the most healing. If you are not humble enough, you cannot be a healer. That was one of the prerequisites.
Isn't that wonderful? Oh
yes,
my
it
God.
Is. And ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking to a young lady here who is full of wisdom. And I explained to her earlier that our group mainly started out to address the issues of women and to speak into their lives and to give them a voice. We are an advocacy consumer group who works on closing the gap of disparity. And with this literacy opportunity, we aim to touch as many lives as we can in orator, in lecturing, in speaking, and literacy, because we know when you have tools where you can use books and material, you can fight your way out of any bad situation. Most people go through things because of ignorance, because they don't know they have choices and options. Most people